Episode 25 with Charlie Ambler of the Daily Zen.
Where meditation meets daily life, this is the Meditation Freedom Podcast.
Thank you so much for listening in to the Meditation Freedom Podcast. My name is Seeker Rode, I'm your host, and this podcast is all about meditation and mindfulness and why we do it and how we bring it into our daily lives. And today's episode is going to be an interview with Charlie Ambler of the Daily Zen, and he has a very popular website called the Daily Zen, as well as an extremely popular Twitter account. And in this episode, Charlie will talk a little bit about how he got started with that, and how he got started with his meditation practice and how it's helping him in his creative endeavors. And he's only 22 years old, but he got started with the exploration into Buddhist meditation back when he was only 13 years old or young. Charlie began the site in 2008 as a way to chronicle his study of Zen and the practice of meditation. And he currently is working on raising enough funding to work on this daily Zen full-time, and is also writing a book about Zen practice and contemporary life. And he lives in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, and enjoys playing drums, walking, and petting other people's dogs. And I think he likes cats, too. You can see a picture of him and one of the cats that he likes in the show notes for this podcast, meditationfreedom.com/25. Let's get right into the interview with Charlie Ambler of the Daily Zen. Thank you so much, Charlie, for joining this interview.
Sure, my pleasure.
So what I'd like to ask my guests at the beginning usually is how they got to a meditation practice, and maybe you can feel free to take as much time as you need to just kind of go into what brought you to a meditation practice or what made you realize you needed something like that.
Sure. I've always been a rather impulsive and anxious person. And it started when I was a pretty small kid, and I got in trouble a lot when I was a little kid. And I happened to have a grandmother who was a very avid reader and was a music historian. And one of the musicians who she was responsible for interviewing in her career was John Cage. And John Cage was a pretty well-known avant-garde classical composer,
right,
who used a lot of Zen philosophy in his work and sort of embraced the absurdities that Zen tackles and practiced meditation himself and all this. And so he had given my grandmother a copy of a book called Zen Buddhism. And when I was pretty young, I think probably 13, I was walking around her house and I just sort of found it, was curious about it, and so started looking through it. Mm-hmm. And I was really intrigued by all the stories in it, because I thought that they were wasn't what I had heard previously about what that practice was, and it sort of elucidated a different side of what I had heard described as Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of looked up more about it and figured out that I really liked it, and did a lot of reading on the internet and started to look up meditation guides and all these things. And then I just started sitting in my room every night and taking 10 or 20 minutes to count my breathing and try different methods of holding my breath and different things I was reading about, basically. And I sort of settled on the simple Zazen meditation, which is a very basic counting of the breath and sitting in a specific position and all of that. And continued that for, I guess it's been, I'm 22 now, so I guess it's been like 9 years. And at times in my life when I haven't meditated regularly, I find that my anxiety increases. I'm more prone to bad habits and bad ways of thinking, and I feel generally less centered and less creative.
Great. And so what specific teacher or practice are you using at this time?
Nowadays, mostly because I've been putting a lot of effort into building this daily Zen website. So I've been focusing on doing this specifically, the specific Zen type of meditation, which is called Zazen, and is it's pretty much what people call mindfulness meditation, where you just kind of count your breaths, and then after a little while, the counting subsides, and you just focus on your breath. And there's an old saying that you let your thoughts come and go, but you don't serve them tea. And so I always remember that when I'm practicing, and I try to realize that there's going to be lots of distractions, but
yeah, that's a nice one.
To pay them too much attention only makes it harder. So
right. And have you noticed changes from when you first started it to where you are now in terms of your practice and how it influences your day-to-day life?
Yeah, when I was young, it was a lot easier to do, I feel like, because I had less, I kind of had a smaller bank of sensory information in my head, and I could just sort of sit and do it. Despite the fact that I was a very hyperactive kid, I was kind of able to just sit and zone out for 20 minutes and focus on my breath. And now, you know, I live in New York, I'm very busy. I do a lot of reading, and there's always stuff floating around up in my head, and there's, you know, all thoughts of everything that comes with adulthood, like, you know, all those burdens and good things and bad things.
Right.
And so I find it a lot more difficult to practice now, but for that same reason, I find it that much more rewarding because it's more of a challenge to quiet my mind now than it was when I started. And I think that's all the more reason why it's so important for me to power through it and try to do it each day. And sort of detach myself from it at wanting to get anything out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I find it becomes extremely, ironically, it becomes extremely difficult to meditate when I want to get something out of it.
Right. Yeah, like you get into a kind of a chasing mind. And
yeah, you start getting like a circular thinking cycle of thinking about thinking and then thinking about not thinking about thinking. Once you get trapped in it, it's a real force to get out of it. But once you figure out that if you just kind of allow yourself to step back and get out of it, it becomes easy, and it allows you to, or allows me at least to, step back from my own thoughts on a day-to-day basis and kind of view myself from a different lens and give my problems less importance, and not get so stressed out and so worried about things and sort of just let them come to pass, you know?
Mm-hmm. And has it changed your outlook on life on some of the, because I know in your website, the Daily Zen, mm-hmm. you talk a little bit, post a blog post about how some of your thinking has changed. Maybe you can give me a couple examples of that.
Sure. Well, when I started, I was pretty young, and I sort of was not very good at discerning between the types of readings that were genuine, genuinely Zen thinking, and readings that were sort of this strange New Age, corporate way of viewing Eastern philosophy and viewing meditation practice, and kind of, I would read things that would make it sound like it was this thing that would allow you to accomplish your goals and this thing that would allow you to, you know, do your job really well and all this stuff. And then I started trying to get deeper into like the actual Eastern writings on the matter. And I realized that, the specific school of thought that I was interested in, this whole Zen school, is very much about divorcing yourself from all expectations of the same types of goals and ambitions that I had been reading people using meditation to address. And so I don't know how much I changed my thinking about Zen itself, but I realized that this was part of this larger concept that I think is very well illustrated in Taoist writings, where when you step back from something and detach yourself from it, you have this strange side effect of achieving it. And so if you, you know, there's a quote in the Tao Te Ching, the world is won by those who let it go. Mm-hmm. And so when you practice meditation for a while, you find yourself, you know, you don't really care that much about what's going on in your life. You don't attach too much credence to expectations or to future goals. And, you know, I don't find myself planning my life 10 years ahead because I just know that that's not how it works. And I don't find myself doing things for the sake of being successful at them. You know, I don't put clickbait on my website, and I don't play, you know, I play music, but I don't play music that I think is going to become popular. And I studied something that's extremely impractical and, you know, isn't like going to get me rich or anything. And I've sort of learned to detach myself from wanting to achieve things and instead to just do things. And the funny contradiction of that is that when you stop caring so much about the result of what you're doing, you end up doing a ton more. And so, you know, ever since I've really implemented that philosophy into my life, I've found myself far less anxious about starting things. And I just kind of throw myself into them and do them. And sometimes the result is, you know, total garbage, but I've learned that the key is to just do things. Mm-hmm. And to not care about the results and to learn from them. You know, something happens and you just revisit something later.
Right. Yeah. And so there's a part of that that sounds to me like there's also a part of understanding how you who you are and what you're about changes a little bit, because what you mentioned earlier, those performance-based thinking and, you know, using meditation as a means to an end rather than as a way to let go is, you know, it's like it's tied to also a persona we're expected to have in careers. You're supposed to be this particular person, so there's attachment to a particular persona as well. Have you noticed any changes with that from practice?
Definitely. I think I found myself confronting the idea of, there's that whole idea in Zen of true self, and how you find the true self by looking inwards rather than looking outwards. Mm-hmm. And then there's a healthy, you know, there's a healthy ego, which is who you really are. And then there's kind of the false ego of, you know, the various personas and cultural influences and social influences and all these things. And so, yeah, I think my practice has helped me, at least partially, shed ideas of who I think I'm supposed to be, or make me feel less prone to idolizing people who I admire, or trying to be like other people, mm-hmm. and instead to kind of learn from people, but not to emulate them or imitate them, and to try and take what I learn from people and use it in a way that feels true to myself. And I guess that only comes through really questioning yourself and your beliefs, and that kind of seems to happen naturally when I meditate. And I realized, like, oh, I'm doing actually, you know, I'm working on this thing, and I'm not really doing it for my own reasons, and it doesn't really match up with my real self, and that's probably causing some anxiety. And then I'll, you know, figure out a way to move away from doing that thing and try and do something that is more in line with my real self.
And would you say that your project with the Daily Zen is more in alignment with who you're naturally?
Yeah, I think it is now. I think the greatest gift I've gotten out of working on that site is that it's reflected my various troubles with figuring out who I actually am through meditating. And so there have been periods where the site has been, you know, lots of sappy inspirational quotes that don't really have that much meaning or that much grounding in reality. And there's been times where I've written, you know, years ago where I've written kind of pretty, you know, run-of-the-mill derivative posts about, like, you know, 10 things to help you get your job done better and stuff like that, because I thought that that was sort of what I was supposed to do, you know?
Right.
Because I had this website for 8 years, and so I just sort of, for a while, thought that there was a right way to do it, so I was doing it that way. And only fairly recently, probably in the last year or so, I've sort of really sat down and said, well, this is something that I want to keep doing for a while, and so I want to do it in a way that feels really true to myself. And so I sort of removed all advertisements from the site. I simplified the hell out of it and made it just display writing. Its sole purpose, really, is to display writing. And
pretty pictures, too.
And pretty pictures, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I studied art history, so I'm definitely very much into the association of words and image, and so I try and curate it in a certain way. But basically, I mean, the practice itself just helped me turn the site into something that I really like and that I appreciate, and that, you know, gives me a certain sense of fulfillment, because even if no one read it, it's something that I would feel grateful to have. You know what I mean?
Right. And you're expressing something that's probably wanting to express itself, I would think.
Definitely. And it's the good thing about it now is that I finally feel that it's something that is real to me, that expresses who I actually am. And so the writing is so much easier now, because I'm not pandering and I'm not trying to come off in a certain way or emulate, you know, Alan Watts or Thich Nhat Hanh or whatever. I'm just writing from my own point of view about concepts that I encounter while I meditate and go about my daily life. And, you know, if I get lazy and I stop meditating, the process becomes a lot more difficult. And so it both encourages me to continue my practice, and the practice itself supplies me with most of the content for the site.
Huh, interesting. Yeah. And do you also sit with a group, just as an aside?
Do I sit with a group?
Yeah. Do you like practice with others or like on retreats or?
No, I haven't really. I've always just kind of kept it a solitary pursuit. And I guess that's probably because I learned it such a long time ago, or not such a long time ago, but when I was pretty young. I've gone to a few group meditation sessions, and I've taught a few friends how to do it. I'm trying to get to the point where I can lead a group meditation. I'm trying to recruit some people who read the Daily Zen who would be interested in participating in that. And, trying to teach people how to do it. But no, I've never gone on a session. I've never gone to a retreat. I'm sure that would be a valuable experience, but for some reason I've just never felt terribly compelled to do it.
Hmm. But it sounds like your website is one way of encouraging you to continue practicing, so that's really cool.
Definitely, yeah. And it has a social element, you know, because the following has grown quite a bit since I started it, so it's nice to every day have a certain level of encouragement from the people who follow it to continue doing it, you know, and to continue practicing.
Right. And for the folks who don't know about the Daily Zen, is it mainly your website, or is it also the Twitter and the Facebook that causes you to have this really big growth that you've seen with it?
Yeah, it started as just exclusively a Twitter account. And it grew, it started when Twitter was very young, so it grew with Twitter and it's become pretty popular. And that's where I feel the biggest sense of community with it. There's a Facebook page as well, and the website comments are disabled, so there's not much of a discussion forum on the website. Most of the discussion occurs on Facebook and primarily on Twitter. The biggest hub of Daily Zen is on Twitter, and that's where I feel the most social interaction about it. And it's fun because it all has to be brief. It all has to be under 140 characters, which I think makes Twitter a very Zen platform, because
right.
people can't be verbose, and they can't be hateful really in an elaborate way. And they sort of either just got to say what they're going to say or not say it. They have to be brief, and so it ends up being a good forum for quotes and aphorisms and people being grateful for things.
Yeah, that's interesting. And what have you found with the stuff that you post on Twitter that resonates the most with people?
The things that resonate the most are usually short statements, either by myself or statements that I find quoted from books and other places that elucidate a certain idea about meditation or about mindfulness or about compassion. Sort of just brief aphoristic statements that speak to people. And those tend to do very well. Sometimes they do way better than I anticipate, which is fun. I share a lot of posts to long posts, and by far and away the most successful thing that I share are quotes that I think stick with people.
And quotes that resonate with you as well before you put them on Twitter, or how does that work?
Yeah, definitely. There are a few that I post fairly regularly because they've just always been my favorite since I first started researching this 8 years ago. And they're usually little Zen proverbs, some of my favorite ones. There's one that's after enlightenment, the laundry.
Yeah.
Let go or be dragged. That always does very well. lots of quotes by famous Zen writers like Thich Nhat Hanh and Alan Watts, and even spiritual teachers like Eckhart Tolle and Osho, people like that. And then also, some of the best performing ones are little bits of wisdom that might not necessarily be by people who are Zen practitioners, but still reveal a certain idea that is Zen in nature. And it can be from anyone. Like, there's even someone like Nietzsche who really hated Buddhism. Some of his quotes are very much embracing, without realizing it, I guess, of some philosophical ideas from Zen and from Buddhism.
Do you have an example of that?
Yeah, I guess. Well, yesterday I posted his very famous quote, "When you stare into the abyss stares back at you."
That
I'm
one.
not stating it exactly correctly, but that's very much I think specifically a Zen idea, which is, been tackled by countless religions and philosophies, where your world is made up of your thoughts, and what comprises your thoughts ends up coloring the way that you experience the world. So that ties in very close to the meditation for me, I think.
Right. I'm just grabbing a couple of things that I read from some of your small posts. Like you mentioned, the world becomes amazing when we acknowledge mere existence as a miracle in and of itself, and when we appreciate what is and has always been rather than what could be. Is that something that occurred to you at some point?
Yes, definitely. I think that is sort of a way of thinking that comes out of meditating and of not judging things as good or bad, and of just sort of letting things wash over you and appreciating everything equally. And I think it specifically comes for me from the come down of various good things, good experiences and relationships and achievements and all of these things. Anytime something quote unquote good happens, there's a certain return to reality once the initial euphoria of it washes away. And it's sort of, for me, always makes me realize that state is pretty arbitrary, and that sense of contentment and euphoria is available to us at any time. And we're sort of taught that it needs a stimulus, and we're taught that it needs an achievement, or you need to get a great job or get laid or do some crazy thing in order to feel this excitement about life. But when you experience that excitement, you realize that you're just a person and you're experiencing it, and if you learn to discipline your mind, you can experience that just by, you know, looking at an animal or laying down and looking at the sky or doing anything, you know, just walking around.
Right.
So I guess that's the biggest takeaway from that type of non-judgment that occurs in meditation.
Yeah, and I think a big part of it is also the slowing down so that you can actually see it, because we tend to do the running, and you talk about that too. You talk about the craving and unsatisfactoriness and the need to create more and more things and fabricate new needs. And then it prevents us from really slowing down and seeing what's right in front of our noses, which is, you know, like you say, a miracle.
Right, right, totally. And it's a weird... It's a weird thing for me, because I feel that there's this whole, it's sort of a weird political idea, because there's this whole cult of progress, and everyone's obsessed with progressing and going forward and building new, you know, constantly building new things and going to the next level and all of this. And I feel like that just kind of represents a societal type of craving that individuals have that makes them unhappy. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that is contributing to a mass sense of unhappiness, that people are so obsessed with the future because of technology and all these other things, and as a result tend to forget the past and neglect the present, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's very insightful.
Yeah, and I don't know, I mean, that's where I'm at right now, though. The fun thing about this is that it's the type of practice that I think makes you okay with changing your mind.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. Yeah, change is okay.
Yeah, in 6 months I might feel differently, but...
Very nice, yeah. Any other things that you, where you find that you bring your practice of meditation or mindfulness into your daily life, like if you're out, you know, out and about in the city, do you have any examples of where you bring that practice with you?
Yeah, I think there's a very easy trap living in a major, sorry, there's some background noise here. There's a very easy trap when you live in a major metropolitan area to be totally inundated by the chaos and to be sort of paralyzed by all of the sensory information and all the stuff, because it's really insane. Like, the modern city is a really insane place. And so sometimes I find myself walking around and it still jars me, and I still go like, man, this is really a crazy place. I live in Brooklyn, but whenever I go into Manhattan and I go uptown to Times Square or even to a place where there's a lot of skyscrapers, I'm sort of just sometimes feel paralyzed by how artificial it is. And I used to let that terrify me and cause a lot of anxiety. But now I sort of like to see myself as part of the whole thing and realize that I'm not detached from it, and I'm not individual of it. I'm a functioning part of this thing. Just as like Alan Watts says that you're a functioning part of the universe. And he actually has a great speech about New York City where he sort of teaches his audience to view the city as as akin to a human body, where, you know, it has all of its organs and its functionings, and it sort of functions autonomously thanks to all of these little individual cells, and the cells end up being people, you know, and animals and machines and all of these little things. And so living in the city kind of forces you to see yourself as not apart from the city, but as very much a part of the fabric. And for me, that translates to everything, you know. So you kind of just realize that you're just you're made up of matter, and you're floating around the place that you live, and someday you'll die, and you don't disappear. You just kind of become a different thing eventually. And I wrote a post about this, but it's sort of this concept that of universality, you know, and recognizing that you are part of everything. And I think once I really understood that, it didn't really cause me any anxiety, and it didn't cause me to have an inflated sense of ego. I think when you understand it in a certain way, it's very humbling.
Right.
And it makes places like New York not feel intimidating because you don't really feel forced to assert yourself, you know?
Right. But at the same time, as you mentioned earlier too, it doesn't make you so small that you become non-existent. There's something
right.
also that brings forth your unique individual contribution then.
Definitely. Yeah. There's a Yiddish concept that my mother really likes called the Yetzihara. And it's sort of this idea that you are both the speck of dust and the center of the universe. And instead of just feeling one side of that, I feel like a lot of people, they either feel on top of the world or they feel completely insignificant.
Right.
And so the key, I feel, in a very Zen practice is to go beyond the one side or the other and to sort of just feel a transcending of both sides and realize that you're both.
Mm-hmm.
Both insignificant and very significant, and that if you're alive, you're part of this thing forever. You're never gonna fully disappear from it, no matter what. You're always going to exist in some form or another, which is a very trippy concept, but helped me feel less anxious about things.
And I would think it also makes you more conscious about, you know, the choices you make and the intentions and everything you have, because you live on in some way or another. So, you know, depending on what choices you make, those choices have consequences and they live on in some way or another.
Definitely. And I think that's what karma really means. People think that karma is sort of this weird cosmic thing, but I think it's very much just the ripple effect of your actions. And yes, that's definitely true, what you're saying, to me at least.
Oh, great. Well, we're just about at the end here, and maybe you want to tell people what your website is and how they can follow your stories and posts.
Sure. Well, I guess the best way to follow it is to follow twitter.com/dailyzen. The website is called thedailyzen.org. There's another great website that I found out about fairly recently called Daily Zen, which posts lots of Zen content as well. But yeah, my website is thedailyzen.org. The Twitter account is twitter.com/dailyzen. And if you just Google Daily Zen, you'll find everything and hopefully enjoy it.
Great. Yeah, I'll make sure the links are all pointing to those sites too, as well as your Facebook page. And
cool. Yeah. Sounds good.
Well, it's been a real pleasure to talk with you, and I hope to see more great posts on the Daily Zen.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been a pleasure for me too. Definitely fun to talk about it, so thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Well, I hope you enjoyed this interview with Charlie Amler of the Daily Zen, and you can find all about the site and the show notes in meditationfreedom.com/25. And of course, you're always welcome and encouraged to leave a comment, or if you have any other questions of Charlie, feel free to leave those in the comments at the bottom of the show notes. And of course, let me know if you've got any topics or related to meditation and mindfulness that you think would be interesting to be addressed in an interview or in a solo episode. Feel free to let me know in the comments or sign up for the email list, and then you can email me directly. Well, that's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, take care.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Meditation Freedom Podcast, where meditation meets daily life.